Hello, I'm Greg Livingston, here with Alex Higgins to talk about his game Bloodjack. Alex, could you explain what Bloodjack is?
So Bloodjack is basically an arcade-style shoot-em-up side-scroller where you're a little spaceship and you're shooting other spaceships. The main gimmick of the game is the scoring system where in order to submit your score, you have to begin this exit sequence. You hit a button, you have to survive for 20 more seconds. If you survive, you just get to submit your score. If you die before then you lose your score. It was originally a jam game that I made a couple years back, and I've been making improvements to it, though it really hasn't changed all that much from the original version.
Okay. Yeah, I saw in the README file one of the improvements was for your nephew.
yes, that came up. Yeah, so the change you're referring to is the addition of pause support. Usually when I'm making a jam game, that's of lowest priority, so I have to go back and add it to all my games afterward.
Right, I'm sure when you have 48 hours, that's not high priority.
Right.
So the game is just kind of, it's an infinite scroll of enemies, right?
Right.
And the enemy waves seem random, is that right?
For the most part, there is a general random algorithm that dictates which enemies spawn and when. And when I talk about the game's difficulty, I can go into more detail about that. But one of the changes I made, well, the early changes I made after the jam version was that I set some regular waves. So, like, you know, the first enemy that spawns is always just a single fighter. Then three waves later, it'll always be two fighters. And then a couple after that, it'll always be three fighters. And so on and so forth. So I set a few of the waves to be regular, less like a spattering throughout, just to make sure that different enemy types are introduced at a consistent rate and to kind of control the pacing of the early game. But those waves are generally pretty few and far between.
Okay. And is the spacing of the waves procedurally generated, or is that set?
So it increases over time, is the short answer. So basically, how it works is that, enemies will only spawn if there are less than six on the screen at the moment. And every time an enemy of type spawns, the cooldown for them to spawn again will permanently decrease a certain amount. And if there are no enemies on the screen, then the speed of the timer will also increase, just to move things along.
Okay. So that gives the player some time to breathe, but not to fall asleep.
Right.
Okay. How did you determine the variety of enemies?
So it's basically just started, you know, I started with the basic fighter type, you know, a little fast thing, dies in one hit, very simple attack. She's a volley of bullets directly in front of it. And then I just kind of build each new enemy type up from there where, so there are four enemy types. There's, you know, I'm just going to refer to them as small, medium, big, and motherships. And basically, if you all arrange them in order according to size, you know, basically, as you ships increase in size, health increases, speed decreases, the hitbox increases. Well, obviously, the size. The number of shots they fire in a volley decreases, and the difficulty to avoid, or necessity rather, to avoid their attacks increases for the most part.
I think I've noticed that even the small beginning ships come in different types. Like, it seems like after the first mothership, there are some smaller ones that come in and have like a wider vertical smattering of shots. Is that right?
Yes. So, like, the three of the ships all have basically a glowy variant that is a bit rarer, and you know, they usually have some, you're usually just more powerful in some way. So if the fighters, there's basically a glowy fighter that just kind of blinks, that shoots more bullets and shoots them in a larger cone, but exists for all of the three basic enemy types. Yeah. And that was just because I was making a jam game and I wanted more enemy variety, but didn't have much time, so
get more mileage out of what you had.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Does that vary the score? Because I think I noticed that and didn't know what was going on.
They do. So yeah, so the glowy enemies do give you more points when you blow them down.
Okay. I also noticed reading the README file that in the initial version of the game, enemies didn't give a visual cue.
Right.
And I didn't even realize at first, but if you look, the ships have like a little a glow on their muzzle before a shot goes out. And I wanted to ask what the difference was between the version without visual cues and the version with visual cues.
So I think the difference has been fairly subtle. Whenever I had people play the original version, I think people got a bit more frustrated. They feel, one of the basic things, you need to figure out in order to succeed at the game is the timing of enemy attacks. And yeah, and while I think the most advanced players are a bit more preemptive with they're attacking, just like run up to ships and blow them up, before they can even get a hit in. More, intermediate players generally are able to, they just wait for the ship to attack, then go in for the kill, and then, sort of rinse and repeat that way. And I feel like it just sort of helps a lot to give some sort of visual indication of what the timing is for those attacks. And even though a lot of people don't explicitly notice those cues, I have noticed an improvement in player performance between the two versions, especially with the large ships with the tracking. What in addition to the sort of the muzzle cue, there's also a I also added a laser sight that indicates player that, by the way, this one can track you. Because it used to be that, without fail, whenever somebody encountered that ship for the first time, they wouldn't know that they needed to dodge. And yeah. So that needs to change.
Stuff like that can be so subtle that, like, while playing, you don't appreciate that it's there, but you're still using it. So the game is, in some sense, procedurally generated, the way that waves come and enemies get harder. Is there a ceiling on the difficulty of the game? Like, when does it max out?
There is a ceiling, but it is very far off. I haven't been able to approach it myself yet, even. One of my design goals with this was I wanted to make something that could always get harder, that had an infinite or near infinite appeal that way, where, it never plateaued. But I also wanted it to be consistently fair the entire time, and for the player to not find themselves in, an unbeatable situation where, they're surrounded by bullets and they don't have an escape path. So I wasn't quite able to achieve infinite difficulty, but so basically, the parameters that sort of govern the difficulty are the spawn time, which I talked about a little bit already. That just basically decreases for each enemy type as time goes on. But there's also variables that dictate, how many enemies spawn at a time, and then whether or not, you get the more powerful glowy version. And basically every wave that comes through adjusts one of those parameters. So basically, there is a ceiling. I still haven't gotten to it yet. Most competitive players like score around 4,000 points. The top player on the online scoreboard right now is around 8,000. I've been able to get scores around 10,000, and I still haven't gotten to the actual end game yet.
So, like an end game would look like, a million glowy enemies spawn and you kill them all, and then a million more glowy enemies spawn the next instant.
Basically, so I think spawn rate increases to a quarter of a second for each type. Of course, enemies don't spawn, as I said before, if there are already six on a screen. So basically, it's more of a continuous entrance. I think around that point, around like 80 to 90% of the enemies will be glowing. And yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like.
Okay. As for the player themselves, the shot is mostly horizontal. There's a little vertical variation, but not much. Why'd you go with such a straightforward shot?
Mostly just because I want to keep the mechanics for the player control pretty much as simple as possible. My priorities were, first of all, the scoring mechanic, and second of all, to meet the theme of the game jam, which was the constraints for the jam were, the game had to be arcade themed, and it had to have a Game Jolt high score support. So I had to focus on those things. And then pretty much the only other thing I really focused on was, you know, adding enemy variety so that, you know, you actually had a game worth playing. And beyond that, having, you know, different weapon types or power-ups for a player really wasn't all that important. You know, I sort of had achieved everything I wanted to achieve with the game and needed to achieve with the game. And so, and I think it works just fine with the simple movement, simple shooting. And I tried to make, you know, everything just feel as good as possible and sound as good as possible, and made the firing sound as bassy as I could.
Yeah. It feels really good when you cleave through smoking wreckage.
Yeah. So I just, you know, so I just tried to keep it as simple as I could, and I think it works, so. And sort of just make the appeal of the game through the enemies and through the tension when you're trying to exit and save your score, so.
So you mentioned that the scoring system is based around planning to exit at a certain point so that you can lock in a high score and then you have to survive X number of seconds.
Right.
Why would you use that kind of structure instead of a usual looping levels or something like that where you die and then that's your score?
I guess sort of in general is something that governs a lot of my design tendencies are to try to explore aspects of the human experience that games typically don't explore. And while it's kind of hard to do that with a traditional arcade game, you know, I was kind of inspired by, you know, the reality of, you know, doing a dangerous activity that, you know, threatens your body or your life or what have you. And the fact that, you know, whether you're doing, like, you know, stunt riding or playing Russian roulette or whatever, if you get hurt or die or what have you, you know, that's not successful. And also, you know, that risk there also, I think, is a source of tension and stress. And I think adds, you know, it's part of what makes those experiences interesting. Not that I've ever played Russian Roulette.
Yeah, I haven't seen that on Game Jolt, so.
Yeah. So, you know, so, I mean, sort of the one downside of the mechanic, and it was, you know, sort of a gamble implementing it in the game. And one of the downsides is that it does make, you know, competitive scoring kind of frustrating at times, you know, to spend, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 minutes on a run, you know, almost make the top score and then lose it. But it does also, I think, adds an extra layer of emotional investment that's not present in a lot of arcade games, hopefully.
Yeah, it's unique and it requires a level of self-knowledge, I guess.
Right, or knowledge of the high score metagame as well.
Okay.
And that was another side effect of it, is that, you know, it sort of encouraged players to just only beat the top score and then not go any further than that, and just kind of keep the competition competitive that way.
Right, you're always on edge about whether you actually have the score.
Right.
Okay. More broadly, did you have any shooters in mind while you were working on the game?
Nothing particularly. I haven't actually played very many classic shoot-em-ups. I think I only just recently played through Star Fox 64 for the first time. And as a kid, you know, I would play a lot of, you know, hobbyist flash games of the genre that are floating around online. And, you know, it's a pervasive enough genre that I think anybody who's into action games is kind of familiar with the basics of it. But I don't know if I've even played Galaga. It's very much, you know, a shmup made by somebody who isn't necessarily an expert of the genre, honestly. Yeah. And I guess I have played a lot of first-person shooters, especially as a kid growing up, and action games in general, and I try to apply as much of my knowledge from those games and making those sort of games to this one.
Okay. And lastly, when it comes to the theory of video games, which would you say is the most important? The game itself, the developer, or the player?
Yeah, that is always a tricky question, and, you know, obviously all of them are important. You know, at the end of the day, you know, a game only exists in the mind of the players. So, you know, at the end of it all, you do kind of have to consider that experience, and especially with a game with high score support, if you're trying to foster any sort of competition among people, then, like, fostering a metagame around the high score competition is very important. All that being said, I am one of the reasons why I'm interested in the indie game and hobbyist developer scenes, and am for the most part a one person team myself, is that I am very interested in games as a mode of individual expression as opposed to, being these, giant, multi-person productions. I think that when we embrace games as a mode for personal expression, things get a lot more personal, a bit more political. And this isn't particularly a good example of that, being a shoot 'em up, but still, that is important to analyze and celebrate games through that lens as well.
You do, on your website, have several games, and some of them are a little more emotive than Bloodjack.
Right.
It almost sounds like you're concerned with the player in the plural sense. With Bloodjack, you're concerned about cultivating a community.
I was, and that's especially true during the game jam. It's probably, there's like maybe at most a month where the high scorer competition was at most active, and then obviously during Gamescape last weekend, it was another opportunity to sort of try to foster that. I think that, having a thriving meta game deserves just adds another layer of emotional investment on top of everything else, and gives the play of the game more meaning than, just the experience itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me. You can find Alex Higgins on Game Jolt, and he's got a blog, sassyechidna.blogspot.com, and a Twitter handle, @ALCHiggins. Well, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. No, really appreciate it.